This is Robert Martellacci, the Mindshare Learning Report, Canada's Learning and Technology e-magazine. I'm here at ERDI 2016 in Victoria, BC, and I have the good fortune of having a Mindshare Learning Moment with Rick Hansen, CEO of the Rick Hansen Foundation. He's a passionate advocate for people with disabilities in Canada and around the world, as well as being a celebrated Paralympic athlete. Rick is best known as the man in motion for his epic two-year wheelchair trip around the world to prove the potential of people with disabilities. Thank you for joining me this morning, Rick. What an incredibly inspiring keynote you delivered this morning. Your message is so powerful. Thank you so much for joining me this morning, Rick.
Well, thanks, Robert. I really appreciate it. It's an honor to be here at ERDI and to have a chance to speak to really a great partnership between education and corporate community and people who are really trying to elevate the level of discussion, dialogue, and research, development, and innovation so that we can help liberate youth and have a better learning outcome and experience.
I was so inspired by your keynote. I have to say it was the most moving, inspirational keynote I've ever heard in my entire life. I wish my kids were here to listen to it. And the message you deliver to the education and industry leaders is so incredible. And you've overcome many challenges in your life because of an unanticipated accident. Could have happened to anyone. And yet you believed, you always had hope. And when you talked about the impact educators had on you and the impact, I'm a hockey player, I've always been an athlete in my mind, and you were an athlete and a very talented athlete. Perhaps you can talk about that impact that you had in being involved in sport and the impact teachers had on you and your life.
Yeah, you know, Robert, when I was a young athlete, I believed that, you know, anything was possible and had no idea how I would address such a catastrophic issue like, suffering a spinal cord injury and not being able to use my legs. But, you know, I was surrounded by family and friends. I was able to use a lot of the life lessons that come inherent in sport about goal setting, about overcoming adversity, about perseverance and grit and determination, and about a positive attitude. But I also needed to be inspired and challenged and educated by my teachers and my coaches to see a new possibility and to challenge my paradigm. And if I didn't have the support of teachers and educators, there's just no way I would have been able to keep going. And I feel so grateful to be here in this country where, you know, I was inspired and supported by so many. And it instilled a sense of social responsibility in me to try to pay it forward as I went through my life, you know, continuing to be an athlete.
You talked about the challenge of coming through your injury and that tipping point of hope and the joy you had in your 16th birthday, the smile with the cake in the hospital. Perhaps you can talk about that moment.
Well, you know, the line between despair, you know, and of course hope and optimism, you know, is a mindset, and you know, it's something that we usually have to surrender in order to move into that dark place. And I was so close, I was so close in the hospital, and I was really struggling to find a reason to continue. I felt helpless, and you know, when we're in those moments, you know, those that really powerful force inside, you know, to have just a whisper of a hope of possibility that, you know, that it'll get better, you know, if you just hang in there. And then to move from that general sense to taking a baby step, you know, and focus on what I could do in spite of all the things that I could no longer do as I was strapped helplessly to the hospital bed, and to be able to put a set of rubber bands on the side of my bed, to be able to use my arms, that was a powerful step forward, and that hope created the inspiration and the desire to take that baby step, and it continued to create momentum into many other steps that were a long, hard journey, but the hope endured, and I can't help but think that my family and my athletic experiences and my education experiences all came together to be able to, you know, to keep sort of feeling that sense of hope and inspiration.
Do you get a sense sometimes that teachers undervalue the impact they can make on a student?
I really do. I believe that teachers sometimes, they get a little bit frustrated, as natural in life, and they're doing their work. One of the reasons why they can get take it for granted is because is they often don't hear the stories, the stories of, like, there's thousands and thousands of Rick Hansons out there who at a critical moment received something from their teachers that made a difference, and those teachers would normally never know unless someone came back and told them. And I think those stories are so important. And if there's anything that we could do to try to help teachers realize the importance of what they do, is to share these stories, the stories, and to say thank you. My thank you is to my coach, Charlie Wise, and my coach Bob Redford, and the teachers that helped accommodate, Dave Shore and Jim Longridge, that helped accommodate as principals and vice principals the school, so that I could actually be a student teacher, and show to myself that I could still be a teacher even though I was in a wheelchair. And they bent the rules. As a grade 12 student, I could go in and teach grade 10 math, and they made me see that it was possible. And without that, it is no way that I would be where I'm at today. And just think of how many other stories are out there. And,
right.
And teachers should hear that. They should be proud and motivated, because you never know when the penny's going to drop.
100%. You resumed your athletic career after your injury. You got to Olympic status. You gold medaled. You did marathons. And what message do you have to kids who aren't necessarily engaged and need to? Because we've heard, the Senate committee and at the federal government level released a report about obesity and, mm-hmm. and fitness, the lack of activity,
yeah.
and all those, the 21st century skills that yeah. kids, really are lacking.
I think it's really important, that educators understand that, we really need to ensure that health and wellness is a mandatory skill and requirement and discipline that must be at every level of our education system. And not to confuse that with sport. Sport is also important.
Right.
It's a vehicle and a tool. But if we don't make sure that, that youth value a lifelong commitment to health and wellness, and to have the skills to be self-regulating and to be empowered and to make good choices, then the costs of the health consequences will be unsustainable, and we have to shift the way we give that learning environment for our youth, and challenge teachers and educators to get out of old paradigms and to be inspiring educators and lifelong coaches, so they set them on a path when they leave high school that they're ready to go and they've got all the discipline and the knowledge to be able to make great choices.
You embark on a 40,000 kilometer journey around the world. What a crazy idea.
Yeah, no kidding.
What?
Well, it's interesting how ideas emerge, and it wasn't a bolt of lightning coming off a mountain somewhere. It was,
right.
It was my experiences overcoming my own prejudice and handicaps about
right.
the view of disability. It was about encountering other attitudinal prejudices towards me, and as a Paralympian, seeing it expressed through my colleagues and friends. And also the physical barriers that were everywhere that limited us from participating. We had to struggle for everything. And rather than complain about it, I decided to apply my marathon talents and wheel around the world and demonstrate that there's potential inside every person with a disability if barriers were removed. And there's a lot of them, so let's keep removing them and start a movement.
Now, our focus is on learning technology in our
mm-hmm.
report, partly.
Yeah.
A lot of innovation and technology
yeah.
went into the whole process.
You know what?
And it continues.
The technology that we used to complete our tour was phenomenal. We had 9 different wheelchairs specialized for different kinds of technology and terrain applications. It was four-wheel drive wheelchairs, chairs for climbing mountains, chairs for the flats, you know, different push room sizes. We had clothing and skin sensors and, you know, an ability to sense the temperature of the legs to deal with winter. And we had flight altimeters that were applied in a car where someone would drive in front and record, and then they would send that information back to the central office. And back then computers were just starting, so they would do a printout of an elevation profile so we could see in a manual what we were dealing with coming up in front.
Fascinating.
And that kind of technology application was absolutely critical in order to make the Man of Motion tour a success. But of course we know that people with disabilities, their lives have changed fundamentally for the better in the last 30 years, because we've had an explosion in new technologies, social media, information technology, robotics, all kinds of mobility devices, communications techniques and devices that liberate people and give them a whole new world of opportunity.
And there's untapped potential in the technologies available today and the imagination of our youth and the possibilities to overcome some of the barriers.
There's no question. If you combine, you know, the innovation, knowledge, and talent with an identification of a barrier, the convergence of existing technology alone creates infinite possibilities to set the bar higher for the future. Wouldn't it be great to see in every school in the country an innovation and design challenge where teachers could help inspire youth in, you know, whether it's in the wood shop to build, adapted technology so kids and people can get into buildings, or, you know, in mechanics or in engineering or robotics, or, you know, even in music or in drama and theater, and to be able to actually pull that together so they can start to visualize a new world and then express it creatively, and to have those designs be recognized and then help follow them through to become reality so that they can actually make a tangible difference in someone's life.
Well, we'd be happy to help you with that for sure.
That would be cool.
So just to conclude this, your success that you had gave you a voice, and you started a foundation.
That's right.
The Rick Hope Foundation. Perhaps you can talk a little bit about your focus and...
Our Rick Hansen Foundation is focused on removing barriers globally for people with disabilities so that we can unleash their amazing potential and they can be fully contributing to a better world. And ultimately, we're focusing on converging on making sure that people realize that disability is a big deal. There's a billion people on the planet living with disabilities, that attitudes count, and removing stigma is critical so we can normalize disability. And then continuing to remove the tangible barriers in the built environment in places and spaces everywhere so people can fully contribute. And that call to action is being expressed, you know, in communities, but also in schools. And our dream is to have every school in Canada every year be mobilized to continue to keep this moving forward so the youth of the country can be aware, have great attitudes, and then find barriers, and then be barrier busters, and keep making change and achieving the original dream of the Man of Motion Tour. One day it will happen.
With that, I thank you so much, Rick.
Yeah, thank you, Robert. Appreciate it.
Your inspiration and journey and sharing that the hope that you provide young people and all people around the world to overcome barriers, no matter what they are, is it reminds me of the quote that you had at the end. The end is only the beginning.
Yeah.
And with that, I thank you again. That was Rick Hansen of the Rick Hansen Foundation. My name is Robert Martellacci, the Mindshare Learning Report. And until next time, keep the learning curve steep. This is Robert Martellacci of C21 Canada. I have the good fortune of having a C21 Shifting Minds moment with Al Rayner, recipient of the C21 Canada Shifting Minds Individual Award here in Nova Scotia. He's a former high school principal and lecturer at Mount St. Vincent University in the Faculty of Education. Congratulations, Al, and thank you for joining me for this moment.
Thank you very much, Robert. It's a pleasure to be here with you. It's an honor to receive such a prestigious award.
It didn't happen overnight. You were graciously nominated by the folks at the Nova Scotia School Boards Association and put forth your nomination. Jamie Stevens, who was the president and chair of the 21st Century Initiative with the CSBA, put forth your name, and it was highly scrutinized, and you came out ahead. As I said, it didn't happen overnight. It's a process.
Absolutely. It's been a passion of mine since the 20th century, since, you know, we first opened up a new high-tech school in Lockview. I was fortunate enough to be part of the team that opened that up. So really, it's been a 15, 16-year struggle of trying to incorporate and gain critical mass for 21st century teaching and learning in all schools in Nova Scotia.
Now, you know, the pedagogy is an important component of the equation. You teach an ed tech course, and it's a critical mass that you need before teachers embrace this notion in a school. And perhaps you can talk a little bit about, you know, some of the initiatives you've been part of where you've seen the tipping point happen. And, you know, it's that innovative mindset. It's not just about technology. You know, pedagogy drives you. You're very clear in your philosophy as I highlighted some of your achievements. And perhaps you can reflect on that.
I think that the goal for me is to get teachers to be aware that we have to make technology an invisible part of our pedagogy. When technology fits, it fits. And if we take advantage of it and how it fits in, we do really terrific things with our pedagogy. If we ignore it when it's appropriate, we suffer. And all too often, we ignore it because of rules or regulations that say we can't use it or we're uncomfortable trying to use it. So by breaking down those barriers and allowing our teachers who are willing to take risks to take risks, we create people who break the ice for everybody else.
You talked about Marsha McLuhan a little bit earlier in our conversation, and perhaps you can reflect on him and how he's shaped the future and influenced our thinking and where we're going on this journey.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you go back to some of Marsha McLuhan's quotes around the medium is the message, or things like we shape our tools and therefore our tools shape us, you can clearly see that there are so many apps and technologies being developed today that are just becoming an intuitive part of pedagogy. And so they fit in very easily for teachers.
Now, Google. Google is one of the greatest innovations of all time, and you talk about that. And I referenced Googleable in one of your comments that you'd made in the, and is Google broken? I mean, that again reflects on Marsha McLuhan's philosophy is, you know, the tools, we create the tools and the tools shape us.
Absolutely. One of the struggles we have is the 20th century model of teaching, of course, was about the teacher was the provider of the information. And that was a commodity in the 21st century. Now, information is not a commodity. Every student that has a device has all the information in the world at their disposal. And so all the hours that teachers would spend giving information and answering questions is available on Google. So when all we do is ask kids questions that are Googleable, we create a discourse that separates what they know and understand from what we know and understand.
Very powerful. That's fabulous. Now, what advice do you offer to a principal? Because principal leadership is an integral part of that transformation and getting all teachers to embrace an innovative mindset, 21st century skills, you know, infused with technology. What do they need to be doing differently today? And is there a book you'd recommend that they might read that touches on this very important subject?
Well, I think that for me, in my career, every decision I ever made was based on what I thought best 15% of my teachers in my school would think, not what everybody would think. And if I made decisions based on the best teachers in my school, then I knew that I could draw the good teachers in my school who were looking for ways to be better further. And to that end, I think that I focused a lot of my energy trying to convince the big bubble of good teachers who've gotten as good as they can get on their own to try to find ways to get better. If you can move the biggest part of the bell curve, the biggest part of the central tendencies, that's where you're going to get the most bang for your buck. So the great teachers have already gotten there using what they know and trying to convince the middle big chunk of teachers how to move there, giving them pedagogical tools and tips. That's how we're going to change education. Not stressing about the teachers who Simon Sinek would call the laggards. Some teachers are never going to change, but the good teachers want to be better, and all we have to do is help them out. One of the things that I would say is that as for books, I mean, I read. I think if you want to lead, you have to read. And, you know, I think that I read almost everything that's out there. There's so much out there. Stratosphere, the Partnership for 21st Century Teaching and Learning has a good book on the market I've just read. The Shifting Minds book that I looked over, it's all good. And everybody offers something different. Common to everything, I think, is an understanding of project-based, inquiry-based learning surrounded by technology where appropriate and finding a way to free teachers to take risks, because those teachers who are willing to take risks, they're the ones that will change our profession. Not, they're living it every day.
Excellent. One last question related to faculties of education across the Canadian landscape. You're now an instructor at Mount St. Vincent. You've been there for many years. You have a course, it's a required core course on EdTech. What do some of the faculties need to be doing differently? Because what I saw at your faculty isn't what I've seen at others across Canada.
Well, I think one of the things about Mount St. Vincent University is it is known for innovation. And I think that there is an understanding that, you know, we do teach the way we were taught and we build schools like the ones we went to. And in order to change that, we have to embrace a culture where students own the learning, where just walking in and giving students information and having them give it back to us is not enough. Getting students to find information, to validate information, to communicate and collaborate the information, to analyze, synthesize the information, to evaluate and leverage the information, to apply and interconnect the information, and finally to create and publish something profound is learning that stays with us forever. It will create 21st century learners who are critical thinkers, good communicators, good collaborators, and creative. And that's the kind of work that we try to do at Mount St. Vincent University.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
You're welcome.
Congratulations on the National Award. That was Al Rayner, recipient of C21 Canada's National Leadership Award. My name is Robert Martellacci of C21 Canada, and until next time, keep the learning curve steep.